Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast that is exclusively available to you as a Circle member. These episodes are a deeper dive down the holistic trauma healing rabbit hole. You will find yourself challenged, empowered, inspired, and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. But remember, we're getting to the root of how trauma has affected every aspect of your existence, and that's not always quick or easy. By being part of the Trauma Healer Circle, you are already consciously creating your best possible reality and weaving a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. I'm so honored you're in my circle.
We're all trauma bonded to the internet. I've been there, so I know what it's like. But yeah, it's a lot, and it's a big world these days.
Yeah, but
we've got to really be careful about noticing, how is this affecting my body right now?
Yeah. I want to go back to, now that you've said that you're an NTP and have been in the food and health and wellness world, I'd like to go back to that for a second, because I too, that was one of the reasons why I got out of the health and wellness world, is because like I felt like in working both with people in groups and in working with individuals as a health coach, that at a certain point with almost all of them, I would hit this like invisible ceiling where it was like, okay, I've given you every recommendation for supplements and diet changes that I know of. I've told you to, you know, go have your vitamin D checked and your thyroid checked and your hormone levels checked. I've recommended bone broth fasting and coffee enemas.
And you're complying. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've done everything that I've said. You're frustrated because you're not getting better. You feel like you're throwing your money away. And now you want to go find a different health coach, or you want to find a different practitioner or whatever. I'm frustrated because, contrary to what you might think, I actually don't have a bag of infinite tricks over here. And it was through my own journey of anxiety and mental illness and pelvic pain that I realized, shit, this was literally this was always in my head, meaning not that I was making it up, but this is in my nervous system. Like, there is no supplement in the world that I can take that is going to fix my brain. Like, can't out supplement the brain. Sure, we can do things like fish oil and olive oil and
support the brain.
For sure.
Right.
But
right.
I'm not, but there's no, I was the person who was like, just give me a supplement to make me sleep. Mm-hmm. And it was like, sorry, we can't do that. There isn't a supplement that's going to make you sleep. What you're trying to like hack into your brain, and we're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, because I don't work with people one-on-one for health coaching anymore, because that's where I reached and it was like, you don't need another diet change and another bottle of supplements. You like need to understand how your nervous system works, and you need to start excavating your trauma.
Yeah.
And because I'm not a therapist or a clinician for this type of help, I don't feel like I'm qualified or should be guiding people through that. So I'm curious, what has your experience been like coming out of the like health and wellness world with supplements and diet changes and all of that, and coming into the world of trauma? Have you seen people healing where they weren't healing before? Do you have a story you can share of someone you've worked with who's had a chronic illness and they tried everything and then you started working on trauma? Like, I'm looking for like a fairy tale here.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that transition happened for me at that same point in my career as an NTP, where I was like, we're not going to get anywhere doing this anymore. I think these things are useful as tools, diet, exercise, supplements. They're useful as support, but they're never going to be the end all be all. And I think that trauma is an incredibly underrepresented part of health, right? Like trauma resolution.
Amen. So,
totally with you there. And that's what brought me here, is when I realized in my own body that I'm missing something. There's a story here that isn't being told, and I don't know what it is, but I got to search. What I usually find with people is that they will come to me with struggles of autoimmunity specifically. Like, that's what I mostly would see, is like autoimmunity or like adrenal dysregulation or hormonal imbalances. That is the trifecta. And always, and I'm not, this is not clinical data. This is anecdotal, but always there's a history of some kind of trauma, whether it's developmental or shock or relational or all three. There was a disruption in the nervous system that will never be mediated by L-theanine. And wonderful as a supportive agent, not going to do the deeper consistent work of rewiring and remapping the nervous system. Yeah, I have people who usually come to me. These days, I don't get a ton of clients coming to me specifically for health concerns, but they will usually come comorbid. So they're going, I'm struggling with anxiety. I'm struggling with depression. I'm struggling with this relational problems. I'm struggling with dissociation. And I also suffer with fibromyalgia or, you know, some kind of autoimmune condition. Like, where's overlap? And usually what I find is that as we start to move the autonomic baseline, and the autonomic baseline being, where do I exist on a scale of hyper aroused, hypo aroused, or within my window of tolerance? If I have a history of trauma, likely my autonomic baseline where I exist from a day-to-day basis is either going to be too high or too low, closer to shutdown or closer to anxiety and panic, right? As we shift that and their window of tolerance gets wider, but the autonomic baseline also either comes down or up into a more regulated state on a more regular basis, those symptoms that are mediated by inflammation, by stress, by dysregulation, they just disappear. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily have a specific story I could pick out, but what I find is that people go, oh, what's so interesting? I've noticed that my markers have changed, or I just am not feeling so much chronic pain, or I'm sleeping. I'm for the first time in 10 years because my arousal levels are low enough to match that behavior. And we never do anything. We never do anything with our nutrition. And sometimes I'll like, oh yeah, sure. You know, drink some bone broth in the morning if you're having blood sugar issues, but I don't really do that with people anymore. And their chronic illnesses tend to get better. Not perfect every time, but definitely better, because so many of those illnesses are mediated by stress, and stress is mediated by the nervous system.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't understand. And this is one of the reasons why I do the podcast, is because I believe that people have a right to know about their nervous systems and what their nervous systems do. And that's not something that we're taught in high school biology. It's not something that we're taught like anywhere. Our parents don't know, unless our parents are like nervous system literate therapists or something, which most of them aren't. But what most people, I think, especially in the health and wellness world, from my background and from yours, and just from the population in general, because there is such a prevalence of autoimmune disease and all of these, you know, other really chronic health conditions, is that the same nervous system that is causing you to have anxiety or depression or whatever is the mental state that you identify, there's something going on in your brain there, right? It's not hard to know, okay, something's happening in my brain.
Yeah.
And the doctor is prescribing me an SSRI or a benzo or whatever it is because it's for my brain. Never mind that most of that is like placebo, and we won't even have to talk about that.
I did that for 8 years.
Yeah, I've done it too.
Yeah.
So, but the same nervous system that causes those symptoms that make living on a day-to-day basis like nearly impossible is the same nervous system that's like in charge of your immune system and your inflammatory response and your sleep cycle and your hormone production and like all of these other things. And so it's not unusual at all to have, air quotes, mental illness.
Yeah.
Which is such a crock in a lot of ways. Anxiety is not a mental illness. In my opinion, anxiety is not a mental illness. Anxiety is an adaptation of the nervous system.
Yeah, it's a nervous system state.
Mm-hmm. Because it's hypersensitive, it's hyper aware, and it senses everything as a threat. That's not a mental illness. That's a nervous system adaptation. But anxiety and insomnia, or anxiety and autoimmune disease, or anxiety and hormone balances, or depression and PMS, like they so often coexist. And it's not because that person just drew the unlucky card.
Right.
It's because it's the same nervous system that controls all of it. So don't be surprised if you have like multiple symptoms Mm-hmm. of the same thing. And for me, that was a huge realization that I had, was like even the pelvic floor is controlled by the autonomic nervous system.
Right. Oh, like, pelvic floor pain and trauma go hand in hand.
Yeah. So when you're in a sympathetic dominant state, as we were talking about earlier, you're constricted, you're closed off. What do your muscles do? They clench up, they tighten. Where do you do that? A lot of people, like the term anal retentive, that's a real thing. You're like constantly, chronically clenching your ass. And over time, like those muscles, they get so used to being in that spasm state that they literally don't know how to relax. And so you end up like with pelvic floor pain and dysfunction. And it's the same nervous system that controls it all. I just had to throw that in there.
No, I love it. I love it, which is really why the approach I take is embodied, right? Because the way that the body shows up is the way that our lived experience shows up, and vice versa. Our lived experience is going to show up in our body. And so it's like, we have to be looking at what is the crossover? What is this whole system doing? And you're right. Mental illness, not a thing. Nervous system state, patterned habituated responses, illness? No. Does it feel debilitating? Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It is not, in no way, shape, or form am I invalidating that it feels debilitating and awful and you don't want to be there. But you're not, there's nothing wrong with you. Your body is doing exactly what it needs to do given the abnormal situation you're living in. And we know that interruption of needs, right, creates muscular tension and fascial tension within the body. So there is a chronic armoring that takes place. And when your body is chronically armored and hypertonic in that tensed up place, for your point, you're going to start to see breakdown in the muscular system, in the nerve, in the actual peripheral nerves, within the fascial system. That's going to lead to restricted body movement patterns. That's going to lead to chronic pain. It just goes on and on. And so there's no way to disentangle the mind from the body, because they're the same. Mm-hmm. They're the same.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. The nervous system is in charge of it all.
This is king.
Yeah, it is. So I'm curious, what does it look like to work with you? If I was to come to you as a client, or somebody listening was to come to you as a client, what does working with you look and feel like?
Oh yeah. This is always such a hard question for me to answer, but I will do my best. So the breadth of the work that I do is about creating safety for people. If I could sum it up, it's about creating safety for people. And the way that we do that is by creating secure attachments to all of our parts. And when I say parts, what I mean is just like the different parts of us. You could look at it from a clinical perspective of the mind fragments during trauma and it comes up with these parts, or you could just say, there's these different parts to me that come up. There's the anxious part. There's the confident part. There's the sad part. There's the, right? And what we learn to do is to fundamentally shift our sense of safety in the world by creating really secure attachments with ourself and with our parts. And as we do that, what it does is it leads to a sense of being safe, secure, contained, held, met, nourished within the world. And as we nourish the whole system, everything moves out of survival and into thriving. So that's what I do with people mostly, is working through parts work, using embodied movements to maybe find new patterns that they've never been able to settle into. For example, boundaries, right? Boundaries are a very embodied experience. If I have no reference point for taking up space, for example, or lines of knowing other and self, then I can use my body to facilitate that felt sense, that understanding. So that's what I'm doing with people, is I'm just walking them through creating secure attachment to themselves, creating secure attachment with others as well through relational skills, and then also embodying new states and learning how to tolerate that. And over time, as we create more security, that sense of my foundation is stable, their nervous system, their autonomic baseline shifts, they just find themselves settling. And when they settle, so many of the, I won't call them external problems, but so many of the struggles start to dissipate, for lack of a better term. But yeah, a lot of the work that I do is just parts work. Noticing, naming what's up, what's going on for people, giving that a really safe space to be held and witnessed and understood, maybe for the first time ever. And then through that, connecting to that wiser, deeper, more grounded part of themselves, which we work to nurture, and noticing, what do you need? What do you need right now? How can we meet that need? And can we start the process of reestablishing a healthy need satisfaction cycle, so that you can be nourished and thrive instead of being able to just live in defense and survival?
Mm.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the word. My website for my food blog is called All the Nourishing Things.
That's a good word.
I love the word nourish. I love it. It implies like nourish is a word to me that feels abundant. Like you're not just fed, you're nourished. Like in all the right ways, and all the nutrient density of your food is going to all the right places. And it's just, it like to me, nourishment is something that happens from the inside out. And I just love that word. So I'm so like, it's so in alignment with me that you've used that so much.
It's a yummy full word. Like you get this sense of going like, I can rest now because I wasn't just fed for a moment. I've been fed consistently over time and it's available anytime I need it. And therefore I can just rest.
Absolutely. So what are some of your favorite tools or practices to use with your clients? Are there any that you just find yourself returning to over and over?
Oh gosh, that's good. I love the practice of naming and noting, which is like so simple, but if we're just learning how to turn toward ourselves for the first time, it can be overwhelming. Like, I don't know how to love myself or care for myself or connect with myself. So I love the practice of naming and noting, which is literally that, just naming, what am I feeling? I'm feeling sad, and noting like it's unpleasant. Or if we don't have access to that much clarity, which is very common for people with trauma, even just noting or naming, I don't feel very good right now, is a big difference from what I see as often an external focus, because that feels safer for us. So if we're just learning those skills, noticing, what am I feeling? I'm feeling not good. I'm feeling hungry. I'm feeling sad. If we can get more clarity, I'm feeling frustrated. If we can't, pulling back into more general terms, and then following it up with what would feel good for me right now. Because the word need, it's scary for us. If we don't have a healthy relationship to our needs, it can be scary. It can be overwhelming. It can be confusing. I don't know what I need. That's why I feel bad. So asking the question instead, what would feel good for me right now? And what do I need to feel safe enough to have that? Those can be a really consistent practice. Very simple that we get better at over time, but it helps us with that self-attunement piece. So I love that as like a basic place to start. Setting a reminder on your phone, checking in once a day. What am I feeling? Maybe hand over heart, like just checking in. What's going on in here today? Anything I can notice doesn't feel great. What might feel good? Maybe I need a hug, or maybe I just need to close my eyes for a minute, or maybe I need to call somebody. And then seeing if you can allow that to happen. And if you can't, like, and there's bigger things, right? Let's see, for example, I might need to have a conversation with my partner, but I'm afraid, it doesn't feel safe. So that's when that question comes into, what would you need for you to feel safe enough to do that? Well, I would need to know I'm not going to get yelled at. Okay, let's make that happen. And that's just one example, but point to point, that's a really fun practice that people can start to play with. I will warn, it will feel odd in the beginning. You might not have any answers. That's okay. Know that turning toward is a big deal if you've never done it and if no one's ever taught you how. If it feels clunky or awkward or confusing, that's okay. I just really like to give people that out to begin with. So it's not one more thing that we feel like we're failing at.
Yeah. We've actually been doing that with our kids a lot, our teenagers.
Very cool.
What are you feeling? Where do you feel it in your body?
Yep.
What does that feel? Just all kinds of just getting in touch with our feelings, letting our feelings take up space, acknowledging them, sitting with them. And then for what we say to our kids is I'm really big into embodying emotions. And so a big one that I do with my kids is, what are you feeling? I'm feeling anxiety. Okay. Where do you feel it? For my daughter, I'll use her as an example. She feels it in her throat. Okay. If anxiety had a movement, what would it be?
Yeah.
And then she embodies it in some way. And generally within 2 minutes, I feel better.
Let's just let that energy move. Yeah.
And it does. It puts our whole family, embodying emotions has put us in the space of not being afraid to feel what we feel, because we know how very temporary it is. and how it's literally energy that wants to move. And yeah. if we just consciously move it. And I was afraid to do this in the beginning. I actually just started doing this past summer whenever I started shaking. Mm-hmm. And I was like feeling silly about it. So I would do it in my office by myself, or I would go into the woods where nobody was with me and I would do it. And then I was like, wait a minute, why the fuck do I care what I look like to other people? They're not the ones that have to live with the consequence in their body of not moving this. Okay. Who gives a shit what they think? Like, I'm moving this through my body and I'm going to make space for like openness and flow mm-hmm. and all of that by doing this. So it doesn't matter if I look silly or not.
And how beautiful too, to create the kind of world where we're back in touch with our bodies as
yeah.
a culture. To see someone, I don't know, in an airport just doing a little shake because what they're feeling, like, that's so beautiful to me to be able to create that cultural space for that. Yeah, shaking. Oh, I love shaking. And I think another thing that can be really anchoring for people, and it's so simple, but to self-touch, right? Hand over heart, hand over belly, a little bit of pressure. Like, it seems so simple. Like, how could that possibly work? But just rubbing our bodies, just creating that containment is so anchoring in moments of distress. Mm-hmm. So that's when I guide clients to a lot. Hey, let's just slow this down real quick. I can see it's getting big. Let's touch your heart. Let's touch your belly. Let's take a breath, but mostly just focus on the exhale. Mm-hmm. No inhale. And then let's just ask, what are you feeling? And that's such a regulating, like, simple but regulating tool mm-hmm. to have on hand. So that's one I recommend a lot to people.
That's so interesting. That's actually how I fall asleep every night. I fall asleep with one hand over my heart and uh-huh. one hand over my like lower abdomen, like where my uterus, like that area. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's actually how I fall asleep every night. It's so interesting that nobody's ever told me or taught me to do that. It's just like something that I've learned that feels good. And mm-hmm. I think that is such a testament to, and maybe more than any of the other guests I've had on so far, I think you will understand this, of like, when we give them the tools that they need and when we listen, our bodies have the miraculous capability of returning to homeostasis, and they will do so every single time.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. so when we are listening to our bodies and we're in touch with them, we will do things like instinctively putting our hand over our heart, over our belly to fall asleep. When I was in the throes of anxiety, I used to ask my husband to lay on top of me.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Pressure away.
Uh-huh. I didn't know. I didn't know then that's like a way to calm down the autonomic nervous system. It's just, that's what I felt like I needed. And I asked for it, but we have the amazing ability of, we don't have to read it from a book. We don't have to hear it from somebody else. We don't have to hear it on a podcast. Like, we can actually shut it all off and listen to our bodies, and our bodies will tell us exactly what they need.
Totally.
And it may be uncomfortable to get in touch with your body at first, especially if you've had health anxiety and some of those other things that we were talking about earlier. But really, that's where like the healing is. And as soon as you begin to give your body, whether it's the nourishment of your food, the nourishment of how you spend your time, the nourishment of your relationships, the nourishment of self-touch or containing yourself, shaking, dancing, whatever it is. As soon as you begin to do that, your body, just like you said, either your nervous system comes back up if it's in a state of lower arousal, or it comes back down if it's in a state of hyper arousal. And that's homeostasis. And
like, it tells you, that's what I needed. It tells you because you feel better. Like that feeling better, that's your indicator. Yes, I met the need. I found what was missing and I gave it to myself, whatever it is. And I know that because my system has just settled and opened. That's usually the experience, is that I feel grounded. I feel heavy in a good way. And my heart feels more open. Like, I feel more spacious. That is that space of homeostasis or groundedness or being within your window where you're like, I'm okay right now. I did what I needed to do. And you're so right. It's such a beautiful thing that when we ask and ask what would feel good, well, just lay on top of me. I don't know why that would feel good. Just do it. That's what I want. And then the body goes, oh, I'm safer now. Okay. I needed some containment. And you don't have to have language around that. That's the cool part. Like, you can just, what would feel good to hear, feel, or know right now? Mm-hmm. Your mind will be able to tell you every time. I've never had someone not be able to answer that question. What would feel good to hear, know, or feel right now? Like, well, maybe they're timid about it. Maybe I'd like to hear that it's going to be okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's going to be okay. Nervous system goes, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe I just need someone to squeeze me really tight. Okay. Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's so cool.
It is. I'm curious if you would share some of your favorite books or resources with us.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's a few books that I absolutely adore. Healing Developmental Trauma by Lawrence Heller and Alain LaPierre. It's a beautiful book that blends somatic and psychological and in this really wonderful way. And it's specifically for developmental trauma and learning about needs and what they are, how to meet them and all of that. I believe it's called Healing the Fragmented Selves of Trauma Survivors by Janine Fisher. It's also a beautiful resource for understanding parts work and what happens to our brains under trauma and how to start self-resourcing, self-connecting. I'm trying to think if there's any others that I feel like would be, those books tend to run a little clinical, I'll be honest. I do think that probably your audience would still really like them. Just, I'm assuming that's what you, if your audience is anything like mine, they will probably enjoy that. But yeah, those are probably the two that I resource and use most often in terms of my work and directing people towards understanding their bodies and their minds and their experiences.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you. And then I have another question that I'm probably actually going to, so I do bonus episodes for a membership. So cool. I'm going to probably include this in part of a bonus episode.
Awesome.
Because I love this like familiarity that you and I both have with the like NTP world and the health and wellness world and all of that. And I keep coming back to that, I know, and that's not at all the original like intent of our conversation today, but I didn't know that about you. And now that I do, I feel like I could probably talk to you for hours about it, but
I'm sure.
I have this probably, I could probably find a gentler way of putting it, but I tend to be pretty hardcore, straightforward. Okay. And I'm curious to know what your thoughts are. So I have this, I'll call it an opinion or a belief that we can't heal trauma, meaning taking care of ourselves, like learning to take care of ourselves, and feed our bodies shitty food. There is a disconnect there.
Okay.
And I'm curious what your thoughts are about that. If I've even said it in a way, I've like only said this out loud to like maybe three people. My husband's one of them.
Sure.
But self-love is self-discipline. Mm-hmm. And self-discipline requires meeting your needs of nourishing yourself with nutrition and things like that. And for me, in my own experience and people that I've worked with, people who have a very difficult time with junk food or not necessarily an eating disorder, but just like binging foods because they
compulsive eating.
Yeah. Things like that. Eating when they're not hungry, they're bored. So they want something to do, something to chew, whatever. And that they gravitate towards like chips and donuts and processed foods and things like that is they're hungry, but they're not nourished. Like they become full, but they're not nourishing themselves. And I think that part of healing trauma is coming back into the agency of being able to be like, okay, maybe my parents did not know how to meet my needs nutritionally when I was little. Sure. But that's my responsibility to learn how to do now. And I'm going to take up that responsibility and I'm going to do my best. And that like when eating well became not an obligation or something that I did because it got me like points with the outside world. There's a lot of, there's a lot of ego that goes into being able to be like,
for sure.
I'm paleo.
Yeah. Yeah.
there's a lot of ego there. Whenever it became about less about wanting other people to think good things about me and more just about actually, this is what I crave. Like I genuinely crave like a giant salad pretty regularly, but sometimes like I genuinely crave like a cheeseburger, like literally like right before my period starts almost every month, I like need a cheeseburger. But like, I don't need it every day and I don't need like sugar every day. And I don't, it's just like very, every once in a while, And I probably could get it in better form than going to the local bar and just getting a cheeseburger. I could probably make it at home myself with a sourdough bun and like grass-fed beef and amazing things.
Probably, but also.
I'm just curious, in your work as a nutritional therapy practitioner and as someone who works with people with trauma, what are your thoughts on how we like physically nourish ourselves with food in relationship to trauma and in relationship to finding that homeostasis with how we're eating? Mm-hmm. And because it's a balance. It's knowing when I need a cheeseburger and it's knowing when I need a salad.
Yeah. It's discernment for sure. I'm going to take a little of a different twist with this and I hope that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
I will wind back. But so I do a lot of work with people who actually do have eating disorders because that is usually trauma mediated as well. And splicing together my work as an NTP and as a trauma coach and eating disorders and knowing all of that, it's really interesting because food is this microcosm for connection, right? There is a visceral, very deep entanglement between food and connection in our brains. It's our very first experience with being held. Both physically, like being held in our mother's arms, but also being safe and secure in the world. So food for the human brain also means connection, right? Whether that was breastfeeding or bottle feeding, there is this is when my infant self is the most contained and the most safe in the world. For those of us who struggle with connection, and I don't mean I have no connections, I'm alone, because you can have many connections and still not be able to enter into deep spaces of intimacy if you've never been emotionally met. For those of us who struggle with connection, those are the people I see who struggle with compulsive eating the most. Because what we're doing in those moments is we are circumventing our need for intimacy and connection because that feels safe or unsafe. And we are moving toward food, which is like a replacement for that safety and security. And this is like 9 times out of 10. Now, yes, can there be genuine food addiction just because of the sensory experience or the dopamine release? Yes. And again, usually we get addicted to dopamine and serotonin exogenously because we have that lack of safety that would allow those systems to work well and to produce enough within our bodies. So when that happens, what I find is we can't tackle food first. We just can't. Like if someone's really struggling to feed and nourish their bodies, we can't tackle food. We have to tackle relationship. And that is both relationship to self and relationship to others through the parent, through the process of reparenting in order to create the structure and you said discipline, but I'm going to use the word boundaries, right? The self boundaries that we would need to make those better choices for ourselves. And as we start to create more security in our bodies, within ourselves, within our psyche, within our parts, and we come at ourselves from a place of both compassion and gentleness, but also boundaries, what I find is that those behaviors, they just dissipate. And then all of a sudden we can be nourishing our nervous systems because if we're feeding ourselves junk food all day long, we're going to be activating that sympathetic arousal. That's just the name of the game. If we're doing caffeine and sugar and we're on a blood sugar high all day long, it's going to be really hard to feel good. It's going to be really hard to settle. And typically we can't come at the food first. We got to come in it from a back channel, create more security, and then compulsive behaviors start to dissipate on their own because there's no longer a need for them. Does that make sense?
Totally.
That's how I come at that. I'm not saying everybody does, but that's what I've learned.
I think that's probably the wisest way to come about it. That's one of those thoughts that I've had that, so whenever you have a thought and you're like, I know that I'm onto something here, but it's not quite developed yet.
Yeah, but I don't really know why. I can't really verbalize why.
Right. Yeah. But I like need a safe person to say this to who's like not going to tell me that I'm an idiot. Yeah. So I think you've helped me develop my thought a little bit more. And, and again, like one of the things that I'm really trying to do and be intentional about in 2021 is just like flow and gentleness. There's been a lot of masculine energy in my life because of just needing to survive,
just
being in that activated state and like needing to survive. So there wasn't a lot of room for movement and flow and gentleness, like things like that. And so I'm really trying to intentionally focus on that. And I find what helps me is that even though I'm still thinking mentally in a masculine way, sometimes I can be a really black and white thinker. I'm intentionally working on that as well.
Sure. Yeah.
But which I think is a masculine way of thinking. And again, like not meaning male masculine, just the masculine.
Yeah, just the energy.
Energy essence. So what helps me is if I'm having a thought like that, it helps to verbalize it to someone. And you have a really strong feminine energy. Like,
which is new, by the way. I will say that very explicitly. It is practiced and intentional and something I had to work very hard to step into.
Yeah, that's actually where I'm getting to is I am more just naturally masculine. And again, I think a lot of that is because I've had to survive and that's what has served me to help me survive. Totally.
Yeah.
But then so I don't know how much of it is nature versus nurture, honestly, but I want to embody the feminine more. And my mindset hasn't totally switched over yet, which is why I can still say these very like blunt things like you can't love yourself and feed yourself shit.
Sure.
But then to have somebody like you now, like at least I have different vocabulary around it. So maybe the thought didn't come out perfect and polished, but now with the vocabulary, like I can shift that and that can integrate in a different way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, totally. Totally. Because what I hear you saying is you just brought a little more nuance to it, right?
Yeah.
Because it is true. Like it is true. That is, you're not going to feel good. And I guess if there's one thing that I've learned doing the work that I've done and continue to do with people is that there's just so many layers. Right? Like it's true. And let's contextualize it a little bit. And that's that place of gentleness, I think, that we can get into is let me find the nuance in this story for you. Because ultimately, this is the truth. You can't feed your body shit all the time and feel good. It's just not going to happen. But let's figure out why that's happening. Let's figure out what you would need to make a shift. And that is that maybe that is that more feminine aspect of being able to contextualize and find layers and bring understanding to those spaces, even though the more masculine expression of that is still true, they balance each other out in that way.
For sure. That was very well put. I think the other thing that's important to note is I think trauma in general, especially developmental trauma, has the amazing ability, for better or for worse, to put us into very black and white, non-nuanced spaces.
Fully. A traumatized nervous system is a binary nervous system because it has to be.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to write that down. That was a fucking...
There it is. There's our line for the day.
That's our Instagram. That's our Instagram meme thing.
Yeah. But it's true though, right? Like in moments of life or death, if you want to think about it that way, you got to decide safe or unsafe. Binary, safe or unsafe. So yeah, if we're living in a state of threat and trauma, absolutely we're going to be binary, black and white, non-contextualized thinkers. That is one of the benefits of feeling safer is that our perspective gets wider. When we step into our adult selves, our non-traumatized bodies, we get wider as people because it feels safer to take in more perspective because we're not having to decide safe or unsafe, death or no death. We're able to go, maybe there's more room within me. And when there's more room within me, there's more room for outside perspective too. So yeah, if you're a black and white thinker, you've likely been through a lot of shit. Like that's the name of the game. If you're thinking that way, it's probably modeled to you and you've been through a lot of shit.
And I think it speaks to the collective internet dysregulation.
For sure. Absolutely. There are an immense amount of sensitive, traumatized bodies coming into a conflictual space where binary thinking feels safest. Mm-hmm. And then we're just hyping that up even more by being really mean to each other.
It's so true. Wow. Oh, this is great.
So fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I feel really energized after our conversation. Anything else that you want to add before we close?
Think so. I think the thing that I tend to wrap up with is just this idea that it's okay. Like that you're okay. I think that is the message I want to spread far and wide to people. Like whatever you are bringing here, there's space for it. Mm-hmm. There's space for it. There's no right or wrong. I firmly have moved into the belief that there is no right or wrong in this world. Mm-hmm. There is painful and less painful or even pleasant. Mm-hmm. But that there's no right or wrong. So the things that we're so afraid to bring forward, that we're so afraid to be, it's okay. It's okay.
That's great. Yeah. That reminds me of one of my guests very early in the podcast, Megan Buer. She said, everything is allowed.
Yeah, like, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Everything is allowed. When you move into a space where everything is allowed, where you're not putting all these rules on yourself and on others, it just creates, that's a word that comes up a lot. Megan said it, it creates spaciousness. Mm-hmm. You've talked about it in the two boundaries episodes I just did with Poplar Rose. She talks about spaciousness. I think that's the thing. That's the thing that a dysregulated nervous system lacks is spaciousness.
Spaciousness and fullness. Mm-hmm. Those are the missing experiences of a dysregulated nervous system. And when we learn to create safety, they arise naturally. We don't have to force them. We don't have to chase them. We don't have to seek them, which is what so many of us spend our time doing. When we are trying to fix ourselves, I believe we are chasing fulfillment. And yet, rather than chasing it, when we can just learn to meet us where we are and allow, to use that word, that fulfillment is the natural resolution to that process. It's a felt sense, but it's an outcome. We didn't go out and get it. It just arose because we met ourselves.